Final preseason game for the Atlanta Falcons is this Friday. It's hard to believe it's gone by this fast, but with the news about Caleb McGarry coming down today, that he had to be carted off in practice, maybe it can't come soon enough. So to talk about that and a lot more, we'll head out to the WadeFord.com hotline. I'm Chris Thomas tonight with you until 10 o'clock. We'll welcome in Bobby Belt of our sister station, 105.3 The Fan in Dallas. Bobby, let's start here. Am I going to be able to play a game of name a cowboy that played in this game on Friday, or is Schottenheimer going to actually play anybody?
No, he'll play some people. It'll just be the people that he's playing. They'll have name recognition. It's just, are they going to be starters? Not necessarily, but I mean, you'll know Joe Milton. You'll know some of the other people that pop out there, I would assume. But yeah, you're not, in terms of Dak Prescott, CeeDee Lamb, definitely Micah Parsons, those are not individuals you will see in this game. But I would imagine he's going to try to give some reps to some of the guys he plans on being starters this year. A lot of the offensive line, I would imagine, will play. I think they're still trying to figure out their secondary, so they'll have some different guys there that'll play. But yeah, I mean, in large part, they've taken a very conservative approach to the preseason and how they play their starters. This is not going to be, you know, Cincinnati versus Washington with Burrow versus Daniels.
As has Raheem Morris, he has already said that this game is purely meant for roster decision purposes. So the Falcons are not planning to play either their first round picks in Jalen Walker or James Pierce Jr., along with a host of others, including QB1 and QB2 and Michael Penix Jr. and Kirk Cousins. You mentioned some of the battles at safety and offensive line. How was the roster viewed going into this preseason and training camp, Bobby? How many holes were there for the Cowboys?
Man, there were plenty heading into the offseason, and I think people felt like free agency didn't do much to address it. But then, of course, they make the trade for George Pickens. They try to solidify the backup quarterback position by making a trade for Joe Milton. The draft, I think everybody felt like, was a real home run. You got Tyler Booker to play guard for you, okay? That is a pro-ready plug-and-play guard. You then go out and get Donovan Ezeraku from Boston College, who is a pro-ready, you know, pass rush skill set, even if, you know, the complete game isn't there yet. Savona Ravel, who they got in the third round, the cornerback, that looked to be like, hey, that's a really nice way to complement your corner room. Now you've got him and Diggs and Bland. Well, then you get into training camp and everything looks different. So Ravel has a setback from recovering from an ACL injury, so he still isn't ready to go. Diggs in the corner room has had his trouble getting ready to go, so that has complicated things. Donovan Ezeraku has looked good in these training camp practices, but when he gets into these games, he has not had the same sort of pass rush success, which we frequently see from edge rushers. A lot of them don't have a lot of first-year success. And then Tyler Booker didn't get into the first game, and then he got into the second and played well. But, I mean, I think there's still a question about how cohesive that unit is right now. So I think a lot of people looked at it really optimistically in terms of what they had put together and thought, you know what, we're buying into the Brian Schottenheimer culture talk. The roster construction is looking better. They're investing more in bringing people in from the outside than they have in recent years. And so I think a lot of people probably enter training camp thinking, 10-win football team, maybe 9-10-win football team. And I think as training camp has gone along and you've seen they have serious questions about their depth, then it's kind of adjusted back down maybe to 7-8 wins. That's the kind of football team I think we're looking at, depending on how good the offensive line is. That's what's really going to determine things for Dallas, is how good is that offensive line? How far are the steps that they take forward? Some of the guys like Tyler Guyton and Cooper Beebe, if they do take significant steps forward, it's going to be really tough to stop this offense. If they don't, then I don't know that the offense is good enough to overcome some of the holes they're going to have on defense.
There was sort of a collective jaw drop when Brian Schottenheimer was hired in Dallas. Has the calm, the storm after the calm, so to speak, has that died down in Dallas? Are you guys still raging about him and the potential for the negative there, or are you guys buying into what you've seen so far from him?
Yeah, so if the changeover, the shock from the changeover is something that people are really intrigued by, I'm the wrong guy to ask, because I thought their last head coach was just not very good at all. And I thought it was well past time for him to go. And Brian Schottenheimer, on the other hand, strikes me as – Schottenheimer is the politician who's been running for president his whole life, where it's like, man, he's done all these different things and he's checked all these boxes, you know, taken all these different positions within government – And when he runs, you maybe feel like, man, has this guy just been working for this his whole life? Like, how good is he really if he hasn't gotten this job yet? But you do have the sense of, like, the one thing I know is he's not going to be surprised by anything. He's not going to be caught off guard. He's a football lifer. His dad, Marty Schottenheimer, obviously was a, you know, legendary coach who was around for a number of years. Brian has been in a number of different systems, has been in a number of dysfunctional organizations, from the Jets to the Jaguars to whoever. And so I don't think there's anything that's really going to surprise him about the Dallas job. And what you do know is that he is a very effective communicator, and he's somebody who really loves the game of football and loves explaining it. So my sense of it back in January was, when they hired him, was as unhappy as people are right now, by the time week one rolls around, Brian Schottenheimer is going to have sky-high approval ratings with fans. And that's exactly what's happened. Now, as soon as they start losing games, that'll flip. If they go 0-3 to start the season, people will turn on it really fast. But he's won over a lot of people with the kinds of things he's trying to implement, the kinds of things he talks about. Like I said, very effective communicator, and somebody who has won over a number of the different legends in the organization. So, like, Michael Irvin's a great example of that. Irvin was very critical of the hire. He got a chance to visit the team this offseason and saw a lot of things that he, by his own word, felt like were similar to the things that Jimmy Johnson tried to do with them, that he felt like, okay, this organization is doing the right thing, and there's real accountability here, and there's real change that can happen here. So there's a lot of former players who have gone through the building now this offseason and feel like Schottenheimer was the right hire.
So I know how much we've talked about Dak Prescott, and we're in Atlanta, so I can't even imagine what it's like on a day-to-day basis. Is the consensus between media and fans alike that he can be a Super Bowl-winning quarterback?
Man, I think it's probably similar to the consensus that exists in Atlanta or nationally. There are a lot of people who think Dak Prescott is on his best day as a top five quarterback, and there are a lot of people who think he is a glorified bus driver and you have grossly overpaid and overrated quarterback. I fall into the camp that thinks he can do it. And I think that a big part of it is, again, what goes into being the quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys and the attention that comes with that and the mental makeup that comes with that. And I think that he's uniquely equipped to handle that. That's why I really do believe in the combo of Schottenheimer and Dak as the coach quarterback combo for everything that comes with this job and everything that comes with this football team. But I think just in the skill standpoint and a processing and IQ standpoint, I do think Dak is one of the better quarterbacks in the NFL. He's not the best. He's not top three, but to me, he's comfortably in the top 10. And when you factor in those other intangibles, that makes him a really solid option at the quarterback position. So Daniel Jeremiah has always called it the confetti test. Can you envision that person standing in raining confetti holding a Super Bowl trophy? And for me, at least, I think he passes that test. I just think that Dak Prescott is probably the most polarizing quarterback in the NFL, this side of a guy who's your backup now in Kirk Cousins.
Yeah. Well, don't get me started on that. we're talking with Bobby Belt of our sister station, 105.3, The Fan in Dallas. All right, I've made it 8.5 minutes, Bobby, and I haven't mentioned Micah Parsons. Do I get a gold star?
And congratulations.
To the best of your knowledge, just what's going on, man?
You know, it's really hard to say, because I think nationally everybody keeps saying, oh, it's the same old Cowboys negotiating tactics, and it's really easy to default to that. Okay, they did this with, go back to DeMarcus Lawrence, then it was Ezekiel Elliott, then they did it with Dak Prescott the first time, then they did it with Dak Prescott the second time, they did it with CeeDee Lamb, they've done it with Zach Martin holding out. So they've done this a number of different ways. This is the first time that it's gotten as personal from the Cowboys side, I feel like, where they feel like they had a handshake deal, it wasn't honored, and they're upset about it. And from Micah's side, I think they feel like there was no handshake deal, you misinterpreted that. Totally understand from your perspective if you think that was the case, and I understand how you then feel betrayed by that, but I'm telling you that wasn't the case. So, like, I think that's what they've tried to communicate. But that's a difficult thing. Players have frequently got their feelings hurt in negotiations with the Cowboys because it's one of their negotiating tactics. And then ultimately they pay through the nose and it doesn't matter very much. But like I said, this is the first time it's been, it feels like an equal offense from the Cowboys side where they feel like they've been wronged. And so, look, they've said they're not going to trade him despite his request. A lot of people feel like the request is just a negotiating tactic. I think they're serious about it. Now, that doesn't mean you can't smooth over it. And if the Cowboys extend an olive branch and make it right that it can't be smoothed over, that all could happen. The problem is I don't know how motivated this time the Cowboys are to do that because of how upset they are by how the negotiations have gone. So my guess is 40% chance a deal gets done before the season starts. If the season starts, I think Micah shows up. I think Micah plays on the fifth-year option. But if he plays on the fifth-year option, I would put it north of 80% that the Cowboys trade him next spring.
How much do you think it would mean for Jerry Jones to win another Super Bowl versus keeping his name, his team, and his valuation skyrocketing as it does year in and year out without the hardware?
So I think there's a little bit of a misconception about Jerry. And I think the America's Team documentary that's on Netflix right now that just dropped yesterday, I think it's a great representation for anybody who wants to understand how Jerry thinks, not sympathize with him or anything else, but just understand how he came to think the way he does about football decisions. I think the documentary does a great job of explaining that. I think that he wants to win another Super Bowl as badly as anything else in the world. The problem is there's a caveat there. If you told him, Jerry, you can be the owner, and I will guarantee you a Super Bowl, I'll give you this extra one, but you have to give over all control, and you're just the owner, and you're not the general manager, you're not involved in any football decisions, but I guarantee you that Super Bowl, I think he would say no. But under the standard of, hey, I'm one who builds consensus, and I put experts in place to act as a brain trust and make decisions and consult with me, and then I will basically just use a veto pen when I don't agree, but I don't frequently use it. I think that that's his operation in terms of how he leads as an executive now, which I don't think is necessarily a flawed way to do it at this stage of his career. But I think that that's the thing, is that he wants so badly to be remembered as a football guy, quote unquote. And I think a lot of people wondered if the Hall of Fame jacket was going to do that for him. And it hasn't. And I think he just desperately wants to win one more. For one, just because he's ultra competitive and he wants to win. I think he does want those things. But I think another aspect of that is just he wants to be remembered as somebody who did it his way.
Before I let you go, how high is the mountain to climb even within your own division?
Well, I mean, the history would tell us that, you know, somebody else other than the Eagles is going to win it this year in the division, because that's, we're on 21 years in a row now, 22 years in a row, where they haven't had a back-to-back division champion. The last time was, I think, the 04 season when the Eagles won it. I would pick the Eagles if I was, you know, in the business of, you know, betting odds and things like that. I would pick the Eagles to win the division. I would pick Washington to finish second. I think Dallas is going to be around where the Giants are, and that's a negative for the Cowboys. It's also probably a positive for the Giants in terms of where those two teams are at right now. But yeah, Dallas, no doubt about it, has some flaws. I think the offense is going to be pretty good. I don't know that they're going to be able to stop teams from scoring 30 points on them every week. And that's a concern. They just don't have a lot of depth. Matt Eberflus is here as the defensive coordinator this year, and he's trying to put in a scheme similar to the one Rod Marinelli had run previously. And that's just so wildly different from what they had done under Dan Quinn. And then even last year under Mike Zimmer, that I don't know if they've got the personnel to make that work. And you can't just change that personnel instantly overnight. That takes a year or two to kind of get the people that you need to fit that. And so I think it's going to be a season where Dallas probably 7-10. Heading into training camp, I would have said 9-8, 10-7. But the more you watch them and you kind of see some of the serious depth issues, I think this is probably a 7 or 8 win football team.
All right, Bobby, appreciate the time. As always, we'll be checking you out on The Fan, and we'll chat soon.
Appreciate it.
All right, that is Bobby Belt there of our sister station in Dallas. All right, when we get back, let's keep the conversation going. Braves underway right now. Final game against the White Sox. They have a chance to win the series. Rowan Kavner is going to stop by, our good buddy from Fox Sports MLB. What does he think the Braves should do in the offseason? We'll talk about that next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.